Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A controversial land sale has been approved by Detroit City Council, but the deal doesn't mean new factories or buildings. Instead, think tens of thousands of trees. We'll have that story. And we'll get an update on safety concerns at the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant in southwest Michigan. But first, income disparity has been a huge issue in our state's economy. That was the case even before Governor Rick Snyder signed right-to-work measures into law yesterday. Supporters of those laws believe they'll bring new jobs into a state still plagued by high unemployment. Opponents say those jobs won't provide a livable wage. They're afraid the gap between rich and poor will continue to widen. That got us thinking about income disparity and how it's playing out right now in Michigan. So we called up Charlie Ballard, professor of economics at Michigan State University, and we asked, just what are we talking about when we say the words income disparity?
Well, there's a lot of emphasis in the public discussion about the unemployment rate or the level of income or the inflation rate, but I'm talking here about what's the gap between those at the top and those at the middle and those at the bottom in terms of how much their household income is. And a big story that has received a lot of attention at the national level is that the gap has widened a whole lot in the last 35 years or so. What I'm focusing on in some research with my colleague Paul Menchik is how has that varied from state to state. Michigan is sort of typical in that the gap between the top and the middle has gone way up, but the gap between the middle and the bottom has not. In other words, it has been a mediocre time for the lower income and the middle class, but a very good time in the last 35 years or so for those at the top.
And I would suspect statistics like that are being looked at very closely by the newly reelected president as he talks about the tax cuts on the wealthy Americans.
I think so. I mean, basically, my sense of the election, if you could summarize the difference between the two candidates in one sentence, it was that after we've had this very large increase in income inequality, President Obama was bothered by that more than Governor Romney. And that shows up in a variety of ways, but one of them is the president would have somewhat higher tax rates on high-income individuals.
Let's look at your study more closely. So just to recap, you're saying basically things have not changed in the gap much between the middle-class, medium-class level earners and the lower, but a large opening up with upper class. Why so?
I think there are a bunch of reasons, but the one that I think is most important is that those at the top tend to be college educated. Those in the middle and at the bottom tend not to have college education, or they might have an associate's degree, but many are just have a high school diploma. And a very big story is that the earnings of those with a college education have done very well. And the earnings of those with only a high school diploma, and especially if you have less than that, if you're a high school dropout, those earnings have not done well at all, really since the 1970s. And that's the biggest story. Back in the 50s and 60s in Michigan, we had a less well-educated population than the national average, but it didn't hurt us because the fabulous success of the auto industry was such that people with only a high school diploma could get upper middle class wages and benefits. But that world has eroded very badly, and so those folks haven't done well, but the people at the top have done very well.
Where do we fit as far as the state of Michigan with, because you studied the country, so where does Michigan fit in?
In a lot of ways, we're sort of a middle-of-the-pack state. Take the ratio of the household income for the person at the 90th percentile. That's the household that has more income than 90% of the households. That's an upper middle class.
Okay.
Compare that with the household income for the household that's at the 10th percentile, which is in the poverty range. That ratio increased by more than 20% in Michigan, sort of similar to the U.S. average. The U.S. average went up a little bit more than Michigan, not much. But that, if you break that down further and you compare the 90th percentile with the middle, the median, the 50th percentile, mm-hmm. That's where all the action was. The increase between top and middle explains all of the difference in the increase between top and bottom in Michigan and in the United States as a whole. The middle just didn't move relative to the bottom.
So middle's that 50th percent, they're just kind of plugging along.
And they've had very modest improvements in their financial situation. And in fact, we are looking at the period going all the way back to the mid-70s.
Hmm.
If you compare today's median household with the median household back 40 years ago, you're likely to be comparing a two-earner household with a one-earner household. You know, it was really possible back in the old days for usually a husband, not always, but usually the husband, to be the only earner in the household and still have a pretty good livelihood. The middle class has struggled. There's just no question about it.
And as far as different states, you found some interesting findings with a couple of states, New York and Massachusetts, that really saw a lot of change. Talk about that.
The biggest increases in inequality were on the East Coast, and though that's the most highly educated region of the country, they have degrees of college attainment that are substantially higher than we have in Michigan. We're not the bottom. The bottom is West Virginia and Mississippi in terms of educational attainment, but Michigan is sort of below the pack, in fact, a little bit below average in education. By contrast, some of the southern states were the most unequal. They didn't increase their inequality as much. In fact, some places didn't increase inequality at all. Georgia is one for which our data indicate their income disparity is almost exactly the same now as it was 40 years ago.
And what does that mean?
Well, that means that the bottom relative to the top actually had some decent income growth. We're doing further investigation about why that might be, but certainly one part of it is, remember back in the 70s, that was a time when racial discrimination in the South was still very strong.
Yes.
Racial discrimination is still there, but it appears not to be as severe as it was.
Hmm.
And that may have helped blacks in the South, whereas blacks relative to whites in Michigan have actually lost ground.
Because of what you've talked about, the changes in wage earning for people who worked in factories and
exactly.
The blue-collar sector.
The blacks who, you know, 100 years ago, Michigan was almost all white.
Mm-hmm.
The migration from the South to the North happened in the middle decades of the 20th century. And why did it happen? Both blacks and whites moved here from Alabama and Tennessee to get those factory jobs.
That's right.
And then as that factory-based, that manufacturing-based economy has struggled, those folks have struggled.
So taking all of this data, and there's a lot of it in your study, what's someone listening to us talking today, what should they take away from that, Charlie?
Well, I think as far as Michigan goes, we are somewhat typical in that we have experienced a very large increase in income inequality. That's something that concerns me. Let me go back further. In
mm-hmm.
the middle of the 20th century, education was increasing faster than technology, and that was good for people in the middle and at the bottom. In the last 40 years, technology has been racing ahead, and that has really benefited those at the top, as automation means that instead of building cars with the person fastening the same four bolts 107 mm-hmm. times an hour, now that's done by a robot. And if you're going to have that good job, you've got to be able to program the computer and fix the robot. So the skill requirements have gone up, but our educational and skill attainment has not gone up as fast. And so I say we got to do something about the skills, especially of those who are not completing high school or who are just completing high school, and we really need to do more about that if we're going to have any chance of turning this around.
What would that say to people in Lansing, our policymakers, our governor, the people who really control our policies? What should they be hearing from what you're saying?
Well, from what I'm saying, if this concerns them as much as it concerns me,
uh-huh.
and frankly, I think it concerns some folks in Lansing, and it doesn't concern other folks, but if you're concerned about it, you don't want to sacrifice education upon the altar of tax cuts. Our taxes, state and local, as a percentage of our economy are much, much lower than they were in the 70s. And we've increased our spending on health care and prisons. Well, it's got to come out of somewhere. And that means we've decreased our investment in education, and especially in higher education. I think that's been a mistake. But it has, predictably, it has contributed to this increase in income inequality. The people who it really makes a difference for are the middle class and lower income families who, even though they get financial aid, they still are going to end up with a lot of student loan debt. And many of these folks, I think, they look at it and they may just decide, wow, I can't afford college. But that, of course, will just continue the trend. And that will be that will lock them into being in the lower part of the income distribution, which I think is very unfortunate.
Always great talking with you, Charlie. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Charlie Ballard, Director of the State Survey and a professor of economics at Michigan State University.